The following views and opinions do not necessarily reflect those of Talk 1230 WYTS, its staff, management, or parent company, Clear Channel. Listeners should not use Dr. Kvitko's comments and advice in place of receiving an actual dental exam. Time now for Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS with Dr. Brian Kvitko. Call 821-1230, that's 821-1230, to discuss your dental issues. Now here's Dr. Kvitko on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS. I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko, and our show is also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, But We're Too Numb to Ask. So today what we're going to do is we're going to go over some questions that people have sent in over time and give the answers to those questions. And also what I wanted to do today is encourage people to give us a call at 821-1230, and here's what I'd like to hear from you about. Call me and tell me your best experience you've ever had at a dental office and your worst experience that you've ever had at a dental office. Okay? So your dental horror stories, or hopefully there are some good stories out there. All right? So if you've had a great experience, please call and let us know. And if you have a horror story to share with everyone, I'll be happy to listen to that as well. So what we're going to do is go through this list of questions that I've been gathering over time. Oh, before I do that, I'd like to give out Dr. Kvitko's question of the day. And that is, according to Dr. Christine Dumas, who is the Today Show medical reporter, what percent of people, when questioned on the street, could name their dentist? All right? What percent of people questioned on the street could name their dentist? And I will give the answer towards the end of the show. Now, you can send us emails to dentallyspeakingontalk1230@yahoo.com or call us at 821-1230. The first question is from Trina. Trina wrote, Dear Dr. Kvitko, why does my heart race right after I get the shot of Novocaine when I'm getting a filling? Well, Trina, that's actually a very good question. A lot of people have that happen. And honestly, it doesn't happen all the time. And what it is the Novocaine, or actually what was probably used was Xylocaine, Lidocaine, or Septocaine. Novocaine is actually a class of drugs, and the drug that was used on you is probably not Novocaine. But anyway, it has in it a vasoconstrictor. And a vasoconstrictor is there to constrict the peripheral blood vessels to keep them kind of narrow, to keep the anesthetic in the area that it was placed. So, for example, to work on a person's tooth, we need to have your tooth numb. And in order to keep it numb, we need to constrict the vessels. Well, the vasoconstrictor is epinephrine. Now, epinephrine is also known as adrenaline. And so, in some people, that little bit of adrenaline placed into the anesthetic syringe will make your heart race. Now, in some cases, it only races because the anesthetic was placed very, very close to a vessel, and it got into your system really quickly. It's not a danger. It does go away within 5 or 10 minutes, and if you just wait a little bit, usually it's about 5 or 10 minutes, it goes away. A lot of people think that if that happens to them, that means that they are allergic to the local anesthetic. And that is not the case. It's just the vasoconstrictor. Now, if you have heart problems, or if this happens to you all of the time, feel free to, first of all, you should let your dentist know, but you can always have them use an anesthetic that does not, either has no vasoconstrictor, or has a different vasoconstrictor. Now, there's a vasoconstrictor called neocobrifen that is not adrenaline, and it works pretty well, not as well, but pretty well. And then there's an anesthetic called carbocaine that can be used in a 3% solution with no vasoconstrictor whatsoever. And both of those would probably serve you well. However, remember, they're not as good as the other. So only have your dentist use them if it seems like there's a real need. All right. So, Trina, thank you for your question. I hope that helped. The next question is from Tori. And Tori writes, Dr. Kvitko, I brush and floss, but I still get cavities. Why is that? And is there anything that can be done about it? We actually hear this a lot because it almost seems like the people that brush and floss are the ones that still get cavities, and they all have friends, family members who seemingly never brush or floss and don't get cavities, and it just doesn't seem fair. So the answer is it's not fair, but there is something that can be done about it. And let me go back to the why is that. Well, people inherit a certain quality of enamel from their parents. And that means that some people have to brush all the time, floss all the time, just to stay cavity-free and maybe still even get cavities on occasion. And other people seemingly don't even know the color of their toothbrush and never have cavities. So you're right, that isn't fair, but it is the way it is. And what can be done about it? Honestly, besides brushing and flossing, and by the way, keep in mind, it doesn't matter how many times you brush, it's how well you brush and floss. So people seem to get into this habit of brushing almost haphazardly. You have a pattern that you go through every day, but you don't even realize it, and before you know it, you're done. And it's very possible that you are missing the same area or areas in your mouth every time you brush. You think you're being thorough, but you're not necessarily being thorough, and if you actually pay attention, you might be surprised. So what I recommend is that you consciously think about covering every tooth, every surface of every tooth, and work your way around your mouth, both inside by the palate, outside by the cheek, the biting surface of every single tooth. And if you do that, you'll probably find that your decay rate goes down. Now, flossing is also important. And again, you need to be thorough. Make sure you do not miss any areas. And make sure that you're actually flossing properly. Because a lot of folks think that if you snap the floss through the teeth and you snap it back out, you've flossed. Well, that's not true. Because that's just the sound that the floss makes when you place it in between the teeth. That has nothing to do with actually cleaning teeth. Once the floss is in there, you need to wrap it around one of the two teeth that you're between, almost like a C, and wipe the tooth with the floss from below the gum line, away from the gum line. From below the gum line, away from the gum line. And that will actually scrub and clean plaque off of the surface of the tooth, which is where you get the cavities between the teeth. And then one more thing that can be done about it, in answering your question, Tori, is you can have your dentist, you can have me if you'd like, make you a fluoride carrier. And fluoride carriers are very, very powerful because if you brush your teeth and floss your teeth at night right before you go to bed, and then you take these carriers that we make, and they look like mouth guards, athletic mouth guards, they're made from molds of your mouth, and a prescription fluoride gel, and you place that gel into the mouth guard, leave it in there for 60 seconds, take it out, spit out any excess, and go to bed. Don't rinse your mouth with water, don't have a drink of anything, just go to bed. Then this fluoride is going to bathe your teeth as you sleep, and it goes a long, long way to preventing the cavities that you keep getting. So you do that, and I think your decay rate will go way down, and you'll be like your sister or brother or family member who doesn't get cavities. All right, I think we have time for one more, or maybe two, before the break. It's now 15 minutes after the hour. Serena writes, Dear Dr. Kvitko, I had an appointment to get two cavities filled, but I got to my dentist's office 20 minutes late. Rather than seeing me, they told me that I would have to reschedule. I didn't think that was fair. What do you think? Well, Serena, first of all, I don't know how long the appointment was supposed to be for. So, for example, if it was a small filling, maybe one filling, at my office, we might have only set aside 30 minutes for that visit because that's all it takes. And if you come 20 minutes late, well, there's not time to do it. And I know personally, I would be weary of running myself 30 minutes late or 20 minutes late on purpose because then I take the risk of upsetting the people that have appointments after your appointment. On the other hand, you could say, gee, it's only a small filling, it was only going to take 30 minutes. I would have waited a little bit longer to get done, and I still think that they should have taken care of me. There are a couple things I want to kind of mention here. And one is, there are people, patients, who, because they've been made to wait at some point or another in a doctor or a dental office, kind of rebel, and what they'll do is they'll purposely come late themselves the next time, figuring their time is worth as much as the doctor's. And they're right, it is. The problem is if they do that, that then puts the doctor behind, and it creates another snowball effect, and pretty soon you have another 10 or 20 people who have had to wait and are now upset and could potentially do the same thing. So in an effort to honor people's time, we try our very best at my office to stay on time. And if we purposely let ourselves get 20 minutes behind in an attempt to be nice to one person, and now we've upset the next 10 or 20, turns out it wasn't such a good deed after all. So I guess taking the chance of upsetting you, one person, would be the lesser of two evils for the dental office when it comes to who to see and how to stay on time. So I guess the answer is it probably was fair, although I think if it ever happens again and you let them know that you don't care if it takes longer, you're fine, you understand that you came late, but you'd really love not to have to come back. I know at my office we have 10 treatment rooms, and we do have the ability to run over a little bit and not need the dental chair. So for instance, I could stop what I was doing, maybe numb you long enough, which only takes a few minutes, by the way, and maybe do that while someone else's x-ray is developing or they're getting numb. Then I could go and do the patient whose appointment time it was, and then as soon as that was done, I could come back and do your filling, and that would be maybe trying to keep everyone happy. But some offices, some dental offices, don't have that many treatment rooms. They may only have 4 chairs or 5 chairs. I've heard of even only 2. And so they can't see the next patient until that chair is empty, because it not only has to be empty, but the room has to be clean. The chair has to be cleaned. Everything has to be turned around according to OSHA standards. And a lot of offices then, therefore, don't have that ability. So, but I do understand what you're saying, and you rushed and rushed and got there, and you thought, you know, it might have been traffic, it might have been getting out of work late. But I guess in the final analysis, try to make it very important and tell your boss, or whatever it is that kept you from being there on time. Maybe it was traffic, so therefore leave 20 minutes earlier next time, or 30 minutes earlier, and try not to have that happen. So we probably don't have time for the answer on the next question, but I'll throw out the question now, and we'll answer it after the break. This one is from Theo, and Theo wrote, "Dear Dr. Kvitko, I hate the sound of the drill. I consider myself pretty tough. You know, I'm athletic and all. But the sound of that drill really gets to me. Is there a way to fill cavities without the drill?" And stick with us, and you'll hear the answer, because there are a couple things that can be used. It's not... I don't know if you've ever heard of them or not, but we'll have that information for you when we come back. Now remember, you can call us today at 821-1230 and either ask a question, give us a guess to the question of the day, or tell us your best dental experience you've ever had or your worst dental experience that you've ever had. And the question of the day, as a reminder, is what percent of people, when questioned on the street, could name their dentist? You're listening to Dentally Speaking here on Talk 1230 WYTS, and we'll be right back.
So hear me when I'm saying smiling faces.
Talk 1230 WYTS, you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but were too numb to ask. Good morning, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. Thank you for getting up and spending your Sunday morning with me. It's 24 minutes after the hour, and we are doing a question and answer session. Our phone number is 821-1230. Dr. Kvitko's question of the day is, according to Dr. Christine Dumas, the Today Show medical reporter, what percent of people questioned on the street could name their dentist? And your phone calls and guesses are welcome. And during the break, we had a couple guesses come in. And one was from Linda, who guessed 52%. Another was from Tasha, who guessed 69%. And another one from Paul, 41%. Now remember that this show is available by podcast, this show and any of the shows we've ever recorded, by going to www.talk1230wyts.com. And once you're there, take the mouse, hold it over the on-air button, a drop-down box appears, click on Dr. Kvitko, takes you to my page, and below the pictures of the polar bear root canal is the word, or are the words, click here to go to podcast page, and you click there, and it takes you to that page, and just basically left-click on the word listen to whichever show you'd like to hear, including this one about 30 minutes after we go off the air, so about 10:30 this morning, this show will be available. So if you're in the car on your way to church or on the way home from church and haven't been able to catch the entire show, you can listen to it when you get home. Before the break, we read a question from Theo, and Theo wrote, "Dear Dr. Kvitko, I hate the sound of the drill. I consider myself pretty tough. You know, I'm athletic and all. But the sound of the drill really gets to me. Is there a way to fill cavities without the drill?" Well, the answer, Theo, is maybe, maybe not, or not really. But let me explain. There are a couple new technologies out there, one that you may not have heard of, and it's called air abrasion. And air abrasion is like sandblasting. And it's in a controlled unit, it's a rolling cart, and it has a dental handpiece on the end, and it essentially uses pumice to blast away decay. And it has a big vacuum in it, so it's got the sound that you would expect from a vacuum cleaner almost. And so it blasts the tooth and the cavity with these particles, which cleans that. So it's not a drill. It is still somewhat noisy. And you can't really do a great job of getting through enamel with air abrasion. You can somewhat. Mostly you have to use it on the decayed portions of your tooth, which means that in some instances, or a lot of instances, you still need to have the drill used, because we'd have to, for example, drill through the enamel to get to the decay, and then could use the air abrasion unit. Now, there are some people that use this unit who would say, no, we can go through enamel, and I would agree with that. The problem, as I see it, is it takes so long, takes so much longer to get through enamel that you might be begging for the drill after a certain point. Another one would be the laser. Now, we hear a lot about lasers. And lasers are quiet, which is really neat. And I use a soft tissue laser at my office. But when it comes to cutting hard tissue, although lasers are available for cutting very, very hard things, you probably know that you can laser cut steel. But here's the problem. If you turn a laser up high enough for it to be able to cut enamel, which, by the way, if you didn't already know, is the hardest living substance, then if you took the laser off of the enamel for even a split second, maybe you moved it off the tooth even, maybe the patient moved, maybe the dentist's hand moved, and it came in contact with tissue, the gum. If it was turned up high enough to cut enamel, and you took it off onto the gum, you could actually cut right through the gum, right through the bone, right through the floor. Okay? Pretty scary. So lasers in dentistry are purposefully made to be lower wattage, lower strength, for safety reasons. Now, there is a laser out there that will cut enamel. It does take a little while. Again, it takes longer because it's at a low strength. And, of course, it's that way for safety. And because of that, using lasers to, say, do a crown preparation, it hasn't really caught on because of the time that it would take. And then the other thing then is, okay, so you don't like the sound of the drill. And by the way, I don't think there'll ever be a quiet drill developed. Maybe I'll be proven wrong somewhere down the line, 100, 200 years from now. But anything, any machine, if you will, that moves air is noisy. Your lawnmower, motorcycle, the air turbine in your dental drill, airplanes. anything that moves air, anytime we move air in one portlet and out the other, it's noisy. So what do you do if you're afraid of the drill? And like you said, you're a pretty tough guy, play sports a lot and all that. Well, what I do in my office is I use intravenous sedation for people like you. Because with intravenous sedation, and it used to be called conscious sedation here in Ohio, and now I think they're calling the kind that I do moderate sedation, which means that you're knocked out, but you're not knocked out. And what that means is, if I ask you who brought you, you'll be able to mumble the correct answer. If something were stuck in your throat, you would be able to cough and let me know there was something in your throat. General anesthesia does not allow for that. You would not be able to tell the anesthesiologist, for example, that there was something in your throat. And by the way, anesthesiologists would have most likely intubated you and already had an airway maintained. Now, I want to expand on this topic a little more, this answer a little more. And so when we come back from the break, I'll give you a little more information about this IV sedation and how it can help somebody like you who's afraid of the drill to have your dental care and not have to worry. All right, so you're listening to Dentally Speaking here on Talk 1230 WYTS. It's 30 minutes after the hour, 9:30 to be exact, and we'll be right back.
Tell me.
Well, 1230 WYTS, you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko, also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but were too numb to ask. Good morning, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kavitko, and thank you for joining me this morning. We're doing a question and answer session. I'm also interested in hearing your dental stories, a dental horror story, or a wonderful experience you've had at your dentist. Either one would be fine. And also, keep in mind that the question, Dr. Kavitko's question of the day today is, according to Dr. Christine Dumas, the Today Show medical reporter, what percent of people questioned on the street could name their dentist? All right? What percent of people on the street could name their dentists? I don't mean living on the street. I mean somebody walked up to them with a microphone and said, hey, what's the name of your dentist? All right. So I want to finish the answer we were giving to Theo, who wrote about how he's very athletic, considers himself pretty tough, but the sound of the drill really gets to him, and he wonders if there's a way that his fillings could be done without the drill. Well, we talked about air abrasion, we talked about lasers, and we started to talk about IV sedation. So, I think we've all heard the old, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it, did it make a sound? Well, I'm not that much into those kind of philosophical discussions, honestly. But here, the reason I bring it up is this. If you have a dental appointment where you heard the sound of the drill, but you didn't remember it, do you care? Do you really care that you're at the dentist if you don't remember it? And intravenous sedation offers that to people. There are amnesia properties associated with these intravenous drugs that I use, as well as the fact that you're kind of out of it anyway. So if you're asleep, for example, if you're asleep when maybe there's a car crash within a couple blocks of your house that you, had you been awake, would have heard, but when you wake up in the morning, you don't remember it because you didn't wake up during your sleep to realize there was a car crash outside, then it didn't happen as far as you're concerned until you see the pictures and so on. So that would be my suggestion, is seek out a dentist who can do the intravenous sedation. Obviously, I'm one of them, and there are others. You could probably locate sedation dentists, IV sedation. There's a difference, by the way. Regular sedation, there's oral sedation, which any dentist can do, but they can only do one dose in a 24-hour period. And then there's intravenous sedation, which can be done by dentists who have a little extra training, maybe a lot extra training, and that allows them to do intravenously, provide the medications as long as they don't put you asleep, completely asleep, so that you lose that gag reflex and that you lose the ability to communicate. It's very safe. You're monitored with EKG, machine, there's oxygen available, all those safety things you would expect. And if you are looking for a dentist, I think you could probably contact the dental board. You can come to my office. Our number is 262-9588, and we can tell you a little bit more about it. So, the next question that we received is from Martin. And Martin writes, "Dear Dr. Kvitko, I missed my dental appointment last week. I had a meeting at work that caused me to miss. The appointment was for 3 p.m., but I called the dentist's office at 8 a.m. to cancel. They want to charge me a fee, an $85 missed appointment fee. I don't think that is fair. What do you think?" All right, when I first started reading this, I thought it was going to be the same question as we had earlier from Serena, but this is different. Here, Martin missed his appointment, a 3 o'clock appointment altogether, but he called at 8 o'clock in the morning that same day and doesn't feel that he should be charged. All right. Well, Martin, I can say that I understand your concern. I do sympathize with that. However, the dental offices are a little different than a lot of businesses, and that is we work by appointment. And when somebody sets an appointment, all of the resources of the office are set aside for that person. And in your case, at 3 o'clock. The office had to have a certain number of assistants there, a certain number of dentists, people to answer the phone, and all that. It's not like a physician's office, and I hope I'm not upsetting any physicians, but I'm pretty sure that when I make a 9 o'clock appointment, it seems to me that when I show up in, and sign in, there are about 5 people signing in with 9 o'clock appointments. And then they seem to take first come, first serve of the 9 a.m. appointments. Well, dental offices don't have the latitude to do that, because with a dental appointment, the dentist is strictly with you for that length of time. A medical office is a little bit different because there are things like blood pressure and weighing you and questions to be asked, and that can all be done by support staff prior to the doctor coming in, who then looks at those notes, maybe asks you a few more questions and examines you, and then is able to move on. So because of that, I do think that it is fair. And I think that when you think about it, you will too. Now, what's the $85 fee for? I mean, think about it. Is that actually going to pay the bills of the dental office for that hour? No. Not even close. Think about your accountant probably charges you $130 an hour. And it's just your accountant. Maybe one person to answer the phone. What it does is it hopefully makes you and others like you in your situation think twice about canceling the dental appointment. Say, you might say, well, gee, I'm going to get charged $85. I'm going to tell these other people who want my time and attention at 3 o'clock that I'm busy. All it's trying to do is to help you make your dental appointment, your dentistry, a priority. Because honestly, I 100% believe people have time, and money for that matter, for things that they consider important. So when you don't come to a dental appointment, it's telling the dentist and their staff that you don't think it's important. You might not even have realized it, and there's a good chance you don't agree with me anyway, but I promise you that we've seen it over and over. The people that will take a couple hours off work in the morning, maybe go in late because they have a dental appointment, maybe come over there, you know, maybe right during their lunch break so they get back to work maybe an hour late, or possibly one of those offices where they can be gone for a couple hours during the day and then just work a couple hours at the end of the day to make it up to the boss. But if you set an example for not only yourself, but maybe your children, by teaching them how important dental health is, by telling them, if you make an appointment, you have to keep it. And by the way, a dental appointment is more important than a lot of other things, including work sometimes. I've had people say, well, I can't come to I have a toothache, but I can't come because my boss won't let me take off. And my answer to them is, what does your boss do if he has a toothache or she has a toothache? What do they do? And I think if you pose that question to them, it might even make them think a little bit. We need to go to a break. When we come back, we have more of these questions and answers. You're listening to Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS, and we'll be right back.
Smile a little smile for me, Rosemary.
Talk 1230 WYTS, you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Good morning, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko, and thank you for getting up this morning and listening. I want you to know that if you don't already, the show is also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but Were Too Numb to Ask. And that means that feel free to call us with any questions or send us emails. You can send an email to dentallyspeaking on talk1230 at yahoo.com or call us at 821-1230. The question of the day, Dr. Kvitko's question of the day today is, according to Dr. Christine Dumas, the Today Show medical reporter, what percent of people questioned on the street could name their dentist? And we'll be giving out the answer to that probably in the last segment, in another maybe 5 or 10 minutes. But I think the answer will surprise you. I know it surprised me. Going to give out a few more guesses, and then we'll just give the answer sometime about 5 till. Okay, Virginia called in a guess of 75%. Mary emailed us a guess of 81%. And April called in her guess of 33%. So, we will see. Next question we're going to answer is from David. David writes, I've heard about mini implants that can be used to secure a lower denture. Why not use regular implants for this? And then he has a follow-up question. Can mini implants be placed in the upper jaw? Well, the first part of the question is, the only reason you would use a mini implant over a regular implant is to save money. Because when I place mini implants, I place 4 of them, and we take then and put these little denture locators inside the lower denture, and they snap onto these 4 implants, and that adds a cost of about, $3,100 to the cost of a denture. Now, I know that sounds like a lot of money, and it is, but if you've ever had a lower denture that just won't stay in, it's phenomenal. It's cheap. I mean, you can't imagine the difference. I take somebody whose denture flops around, literally can't wear, and we put these mini implants in with the denture locators, and then the next thing they're complaining about is it's too hard to get out. And I just want to throw them a pity party because they've been dealing with this thing flopping around for months and sometimes years, and then they're coming back to me saying, Doc, it's too hard to get in, it's too hard to get out. And my feeling on that is it's only a couple minutes in the morning and a couple minutes in the evening that you have to deal with it. And I just think it's not a bad problem to have. So, but can we use regular implants down there? Yeah, of course. But a regular implant runs on average about $2,000 each one. And even if you could get away with just 2, and you should probably go with more than 2, so that there is this anti-rotational feature. If you can picture 2 snaps in a row, and if you snapped a straight, snap a triangular piece of plastic onto that, the little point of the triangle would rotate over the line where those 2 snaps were. If you instead put 3 snaps, 1 at each corner of the triangle, wouldn't be able to rock, wouldn't be able to rotate. So putting more than 2 prevents this rotation, and so now you're looking at $6,000 for just the implants of the traditional style, and in addition to that, you still have the cost of the denture locators or whatever clip or fitting you're going to put in the denture. So the reality is we use mini implants to save money. Can mini implants be placed in the upper jaw was David's second question. The answer is maybe. The upper bone is not very dense, and more often than not, a mini implant would not be your best choice. Because a mini implant is dependent upon a very snug fit, as it is literally screwed in like a self-tapping wood screw. And that's why you can immediately load them, because you're not waiting for bone to grow up to the implant. You have screwed it in with a material that is inert and will not react with tissue. But on the upper arch, it's very difficult to obtain that kind of bone to get that kind of fit. So the answer is maybe, but most likely not. Okay, when we come back, We'll give the answer to the question of the day, and we will have time for maybe one or maybe two more questions. We will see. It's 10 minutes before 10. You're listening to Dunley Speaking here on Talk 1230 WYTS, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Good morning, and thank you for joining me. I'm general dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko, and today we're doing a question and answer session where listeners have sent in questions over time, and we're gathering them, and now I'm giving out the answers. But before I go on with the questions, it's time to give out the answer to Dr. Kvitko's question of the day. And the question was, according to Dr. Christine Dumas, who is the Today Show medical reporter, who's a dentist, by the way. Most people think she's a physician, but she's actually a dentist. What percent of people questioned on the street could name their dentist? You might remember we had guesses of 52%, 69%, 41%. We had 75%, 81%, 33%. And the answer is 26%. Only a fourth of the people knew who their dentist was. Come on, people. Listen to me. Kvitko. Kvitko. Dr. Kvitko. If somebody comes up to you with a microphone and says, who's your dentist? Say, Dr. Kvitko. K-V-I-T-K-O. I still remember my childhood dentist. That really blows my mind. I would have thought it would have been the complete opposite. That would have been maybe more like three-fourths of the people would have. It is just really, really hard to believe. So, Kvitko. Kvitko. Even if you don't come to me, say that when they ask you. Make it sound like you do. All right. I think we have time for probably one more answer to one more question. And this is about implants. It's from Christine, who writes, Dear Dr. Kvitko, I have been told that one of my two upper front teeth has a broken root and needs to be removed. My dentist plans on placing an implant at the same appointment that he extracts my tooth. Will I have to go without a front tooth while I heal? The answer is, Christine, boy, I hope not. On a front tooth? No. You shouldn't, and you wouldn't in my office, and I'm sure your dentist has the same plan. There are two ways that this space can be handled while you are healing. Okay, one is called, your dentist would place a peak abutment, and peak is spelled P-E-E-K, like a mountain peak, or to peak around a corner. Actually, that might be spelled differently. Anyway, just remember peak. And what that is after the implant is placed, there's this little plastic mock-up of a tooth abutment that is screwed in, and onto that acrylic made to look like your tooth is fabricated or placed over top. The problem is those peak abutments, temporary teeth on a peak abutment, they have to be shorter than your natural tooth so that you can't bite on it. So that when you move your teeth around, you can't possibly put any pressure on the implant. And honestly, that's a little bit trickier because when people bite their fingernails or you bite into an apple, you forget that you're not supposed to put pressure on that particular tooth or implant tooth. If you forget and you bite on it, you can make the implant not take. So a lot of dentists prefer not to take that chance, and they will place what is called a one-tooth interim removable partial denture, sometimes known as a flipper. Now, flipper is a little nickname that dentists have come up with because if you take that partial, you put it in your mouth, and if you take your thumb on the biting edge of the fake tooth and pull out of your mouth, the partial will flip down and back. It's just for show. Well, it is for show, but it's also a way of getting the gums to heal just right so that when it's time to put the crown on, the gums look right, okay? Actually, what normally happens when you have a tooth extracted is the gums just heal up nice and round, and you don't want that on a front tooth because if you don't have that little triangular piece of gum between the two teeth or all of your teeth, that doesn't look right. So if the gum healed up nice and round and smooth, without these peaks, even though you had your implant crown placed later, it would still look kind of ugly. You'd have what are called black triangles. So this one-tooth partial then is placed, and it's done in a way to push the gum up and form the gum into these little triangular projections of tissue so that it looks really, really nice when your crown is actually finished. So there you go. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Go out and have a great day. Hope everyone had a great Christmas, and I wish everyone well on the New Year's. Have a great New Year. We'll be back here January 4th with another episode of Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS.